Tonight on the Worldview Weekend Hour, information warfare and American Christians, the battle for the mind and the power elite. That's our topic tonight. What did President Woodrow Wilson, President Richard Nixon, President Ronald Reagan say about the power elite? And how are they trying to control our minds? The Worldview Weekend Hour begins right now.
WVW TV presents the Worldview Weekend Hour with Brannon House. Whether the topic is law, science, government, economics, history, family, social issues, education, or theology, Brannon brings the issues of today into clear focus through the lens of a biblical worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
Good evening and welcome to the Worldview Weekend Hour. Tonight, mind control and the power elite. Lesson 6 in our series on information warfare and American Christians. The power elite, have you ever heard that term before? You might know them as the deep state, the shadow government, the invisible government. They have lots of names, but did you know that Ronald Reagan and as well as Woodrow Wilson and Richard Nixon all talked about the power elite. I'm going to give you some fascinating quotes tonight from those guys. Hey, wait a minute. I thought this was all the stuff of conspiracies. You mean Ronald Reagan, one of the most respected presidents in our lifetime, believed in a power elite or a group of small people that were, or a small group of people that were controlling the country? Well, yeah, even Ronald Reagan knew this as well as did Richard Nixon. Oh, did Richard Nixon know it very well? He was probably the victim of the power elite. And Woodrow Wilson in 1913, right while he was in his presidency, wrote about the power elite, which is very interesting because he saw it from the inside and, well, he warns us about it in his own writings while he was still president. We'll share that with you tonight. Let's start off where we left last week as we discussed the mind control and the power elite being tonight's lesson six in our series, Information Warfare and American Christians. We were talking last week about the Tavistock Institute, and if you've missed any of these programs, you'll find them at WVWTV.com. If they're not there, that means they've now rolled into the Situation Room, where you have to be a subscriber, although we make all of our programs available for a period of time for everybody at WVWTV.com. If it's not there, again, it has rolled into the Situation Room, and you can join for as little as $9.99 a month or $99 for a year at situationroom.net. But last week, we stopped off with Tavistock Institute. Now, let's look at what they're trying to accomplish. The Tavistock method produces these things, contradicting messages. Remember, we talked about that last week. They hurl so much information at you and so much contradicting information that it throws people off. It actually creates a mind fog in our list. So all these contradicting messages, some of them are coming from all kinds of different so-called experts, and even the experts can't agree. And so you have some truth mixed with some error, and all of these contradicting messages creates mind fog. And then it creates the inability to even have reason. There's no reason or logic or context. And so people become very frustrated, and they then begin to actually be where they can't work out problems. They can't think about what is the right solution, what's the right response to this, and they kind of retreat. They throw up their arms, actually. And that was the goal of the Tavistock Institute, to get people to be so bombarded that they would throw up their arms in frustration and surrender. And this then creates people who really are infantile in their thinking, infantile adults. Don't we have a problem with that today? Infantile adults, delayed maturity, delayed adulthood. Why? Part of it is a psychological process. It's about throwing tons of information at them, lots of chaos, lots of stimulus, even creating crises or exploiting a crisis so you create fear and anxiety. And remember, the Tavistock Institute particularly studied guys who'd gone to war. And they studied how guys who'd gone to war, maybe were prisoners of war, POWs, and due to this position of fear and angst they're put into, they could actually implant things into their mind and get them to accept things they otherwise would not accept. And the Tavistock Institute quickly found that if you could induce fear or emotion or anger, then people were subject to having implanted into their minds some idea that otherwise they may not accept. And so, again, all of this psychological process developed by the Tavistock Institute was designed for mind control. So you have contradicting messages, mind fog, inability to reason. This creates infantile adults, apathy. They can't figure it out. They can't make sense of it. They have no solution. There's no hope. Why even bother? They give up. They surrender. Apathy. And the apathy, of course, is the ultimate goal, leads to that surrender. Here's what my friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy writes in one of his books. He writes of Futures We Are In. It's a book written by Fred Emery, and this book is published. And in it, Emery is a senior staff member with the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. And in this book, it's noted that he developed a theory of social turbulence. That's what it was called, social turbulence. And according to this theory, many individuals faced with a series of crises will attempt to reduce the tension by adaptation and eventually psychological retreat. Well, that really goes along with what I was just explaining to you, doesn't it? That's the goal, to create tension. In fact, the word is a series of crisis or social turbulence. And you could do this to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. You could create social turbulence in the area of education. You could create it in the area of a certain job market. And you create this social tension that people finally walk away. You could create social turbulence and this series of crises to farmers and make it so that farmers don't want to be farmers anymore. You deliberately create so many problems for the American farmer that they walk away. And what happens then? Well, you can accomplish one of the goals of the Communist Manifesto. You can start to nationalize farming. So you could create a crisis in all kinds of different occupations to the point that those trying to live out that occupation become so frustrated that they retreat from that occupation and then steps in the government maybe to nationalize it. So you could do this with the area of farming or timber or just name all the areas where you could create a problem. So it doesn't have to be done to just individuals. You can do this to whole areas of society that you want to control. And one way to have justification for the government to come in and control it is to have people just retreat, give up, say, it's not worth it anymore. And then the government claims they have to step in and start nationalizing things. Well, talk about social turbulence or wanting people to have so many different crises that they finally give up. We know what that's like. Do you know what happened to us in April 2017, right? April 2017, a gunman from Saudi Arabia, he was from Saudi Arabia, he was a Muslim. He came into our conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He had two guns and a Quran. It's all documented in my documentary that came out in 2018, Sabotage. In fact, if you go and watch the first hour for free at sabotagethemovie.com, you can see the video footage because he was filming himself on Facebook Live as he filmed his Quran, then panned the crowd. And you can hear my voice up front speaking, standing room only, men, women, children in the building. Thankfully, I had hired four off-duty police officers, and one of them, very eagle-eyed, noticed him and that he was filming, and I had already made an announcement that night, no filming, because we didn't want the media, which were there on the premises, to take it and use it out of context. So this off-duty police officer noticed he was filming, walked over and said, "Sorry, sir, you can't be filming," and noticed he looked like he may have had some weapons with him, and he was escorted out. Now, in South Dakota, he could have those weapons. What he did next, however, was what was illegal. He went out to his car, as many of you know, and he made a series of three videos brandishing five weapons, two semi-automatic rifles, and 1,200, what was declared by him on Facebook, to be 1,200 rounds of ammunition. He threatened me and Sharam Hadian in the conference every time he brandished a weapon. Now, it took us 12 days to get him charged. That was April 2017. April 2018, we announced we were going to hold our last five conferences other than our Ozarks conference because the cost of security was becoming too high. Well, I had been doing this for over 25 years, and frankly, I was exhausted. And with our beautiful television studio and radio studio and the ability to live stream, we didn't need to do this anymore. We would rather put the money into technology and producing more TV shows and documentaries. And so we announced that we would hold five more conferences on the road in five cities that were very popular for us, like Des Moines, Iowa, La Crosse, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and that would be our last five other than our Ozarks conference. Well, we were only able to carry out one of those five conferences because Antifa, the communists, and Muslim Brotherhood and other groups got together and they threatened the hotels, or at least that's how the hotels feel, felt about it. They felt they were being threatened. And as a result, they started to pull our contracts while we were on the road and shut down our conferences. And so here we have another crisis. April 2017, an Islamic gunman with his Quran threatens us. He's charged with terroristic threats and does 7 months, according to the press, at the federal level. That's April 2017. April 2018, Antifa and Muslim Brotherhood threatens our hotel buildings and our venues and bombards them with calls that the hotels felt were an issue of security and said, we can't hold the event. The owners, the management, they're worried, they're concerned. In fact, even a Minnesota state trooper walked into the hotel according to hotel management in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington particularly, is where it was, Bloomington to be precise, called us and said a state trooper had come in there and wanted to know who was holding that conference on Sunday night and that they were getting chatter that there could be a problem and whoever was holding that event had better have a lot of security. So again, the hotels felt threatened. We felt threatened. And the hotels, we can understand why they would not want to have that there. So April 2017, April 2018. Now, are you noticing a series of crises going after a particular group of people? What was that meant to do? Cause us to retreat, right? And the reality is you're talking now about a psychological process of intimidating and threatening, anxiety and fear. So we expand our television studio to what you see today, this big, beautiful TV studio and lots of new equipment and swinging boom and more cameras and more technology. And we come to you through this and we produce broadcasts that are then put out on our website at WVWTV.com. And we put a few out on YouTube, not many, but a few, because we thought that's a great way to reach a new audience and new people. And indeed, my wife, who handles customer support, will tell you all the people that have found out about us because of YouTube. And she's always saying, hey, you got some new followers. They said they found out about you through YouTube. So we will throw some videos up on YouTube. And we will continue to do that. But we mainly put them on our own website. Why? Because I said for years, I don't want to be dependent on Facebook or YouTube. If they shut us down, where's our audience going to go? They won't know. So if they all know to go to worldviewradio.com for radio, WVWTV for TV, then if Facebook or YouTube shut us down, they all know where to go, right? So we do throw some stuff up on YouTube. But guess what we got in our email inbox yesterday? Yesterday, I got this. Look at the screen. This is what I got. Email sent to us. Hi, Brandon House. Our team has reviewed your content, and unfortunately, we think it violates our hate speech policy. We've removed the following content from YouTube. The video is titled, Some Evangelicals Are Helping the Marxists and Muslims Sabotage America. So there you go. That's now hate speech. Wow, that's interesting because that video was filled with facts, documentation, video clips, screenshots. But now apparently speaking truth is hate speech. Some evangelicals are helping the Marxist and Muslims sabotage America. Wow, we can't report the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood in their own document that was discovered in the early 90s by the FBI in a sub-basement of a jihadi. In that sub-basement were 80-some-odd banker boxes, and in there was the Muslim Brotherhood explanatory memorandum, which said what? They would get Americans to sabotage their own country by their own hand. We can't tell you that, and we can't tell you that the Marxists are working with the Muslims together with the red-green axis to sabotage America. That's hate speech. But you can go out on YouTube, as I did yesterday, and you can find CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, which is really Muslim Brotherhood, which is really Hamas, which was really the group, Muslim Brotherhood, founded in 1928, involved in the Holocaust with the Grand Mufti of Palestine, the right-hand man of Adolf Hitler, al-Husseini, who Hitler gave an apartment to in Berlin, who broadcast on radio. Yeah, it's okay to promote the Muslim Brotherhood, even though they were involved in the Final Solution, the murder of 6 million Jews, 5 million non-Jews, and helping craft that, as I document with pictures and documentation and sabotage. You can, again, watch the first hour for free at sabotagethemovie.com. I show video footage of the Grand Mufti of Palestine, the Muslim Brotherhood leader, with Adolf Hitler, with some of Hitler's guys touring the concentration camps. He, by the way, according to testimony at the Nuremberg trial, he, the Grand Mufti, Muslim Brotherhood Grand Mufti, would show up at some of these concentration camps incognito, wanting to check on the schedule. Snap, snap, let's go. We need to kill Jews faster, boys. Let's go. Snap, snap, keep it going. And he reportedly would show up to make sure this was going at a very quick pace. By the way, it's reported that Hitler is going to let some of the Jews leave Hungary and Bulgaria and other places. And instead of exterminating, he was just going to let them go, leave. But the Grand Mufti reportedly said no, because they'll end up over in Palestine. What we really know is Jerusalem, Israel. So you can't speak the truth about the Marxists and the Muslims working together. That's hate speech, according to YouTube, apparently. Now, let me tell you how this little series of crisis and social turbulence works in our world. First, you're shut down April 2017 by a gunman who comes in there. He doesn't shut us down, but he disrupts us with the attempt, I think, to intimidate us, to make us not want to do anymore. That happens April 7, 2017. Then April 2018, Antifa and Muslim Brotherhood come after us in those cities. Now we've got big tech shadow banning us, blocking us, pulling our videos. Anybody noticing a trend here? Anybody noticing a trend? A series of crises, social turbulence in our world, not to mention all the trash out on the internet, lying about me, lying about our conferences, lying about our speakers, Usama, Sharam. And most people at this point would say what? Uncle, and they'd surrender, right? And my friends, that is part of the psychological process, to get people to have so much social turbulence and chaos and a series of crises that they throw up their arms and they surrender, they quit. And folks, it's part of a psychological process. But I'm not going anywhere, Lord willing. Now, if I don't want to comply, what's the next step? The next step is not only to say that what we're saying is hate speech, and then eventually if they get some laws related to blasphemy, as it's called, to blaspheme the prophet, that they've been working on, by the way, on Capitol Hill with both Republicans and Democrats, and they're working on at the United Nations, which is dominated by the Marxists and the Muslims. If they get some hate crimes legislation and blasphemy laws, anti-blasphemy laws put in place, they can start to fine people like me. Then they can start to prosecute us and throw us in jail. What else can they do? They can actually label us mentally ill. They can label us mentally ill. Look at this next slide. This is from Edgar Bundy. I like quoting him. I've quoted him many times over the years. He wrote a book in the 1950s warning about what was coming. Again, the 1950s. And here's what he wrote. Collectivism in the church. He wrote this. Because mental health has become available as a lever to be used for promoting political and ideological designs, a word on the subject is in order. People who are normal in every sense of the word, but who hold unpopular political ideas such as opposition to world government and to the United Nations, federal aid to education and socialism, are now being branded by their political opponents as lunatics, nuts, and idiots. Some of the mental health legislation, which has recently been introduced on state and federal levels, gives such wide latitude and interpretations to psychiatrists and politicians that it is conceivable that anyone who takes a stand for the sovereignty of the United States in favor of congressional investigations and in favor of states' rights could be committed to an asylum in order to silence opposition, end quote. Perhaps next week, next week we're going to take off due to the Super Bowl. But after that, the next Sunday night, I will endeavor to share with you a couple documented stories where people who stood up to communism, who were patriotic, serving in our government, were literally institutionalized as crazy, and it took some doing to get them out of the psych ward. So they can threaten, they can create social stress, social turbulence, one crisis after another, hope you'll surrender. They can pass anti-hate speech legislation, anti-blasphemy laws. They can prosecute you, fine you, throw you in jail. They can also label you mentally disturbed. Here is psychiatrist Dr. William Sargent. Remember, he's of the Tavistock Institute. And he explained this process in his 1957 book called The Battle for the Mind, when he wrote, quote, various types of belief can be implanted in many people after brain function has been sufficiently disturbed by accidentally or deliberately inducing fear or excitement. Remember me giving this quote? of the results caused by such disturbances. The most common one is temporarily impaired judgment and heightened suggestibility. So remember, this is the battle for the mind. And one way to do this is to create social turbulence, one crisis after another, to try to mimic the anxiety that someone might have who went to war. Because remember, they were studying subjects of war and seeing how was it they were brainwashed? How was it they gave up? How was it they surrendered? How was it that they cracked? You could use the stress or even the excitement, even the anger. And as we discussed last week, a lot of times the anger is created in the population by using fake news, false stories, revisionist history, and people get angry over what they perceive to be an injustice. But their emotions have been manipulated and their anger is misdirected because they're getting angry about something that's not even true. They're getting angry over false history, false news, propaganda. But that's when they can rush in with a government solution and say, here's the solution. And people say, oh, we'll accept that because we're so angry. Something has to be done about this. And what do they do? Well, for instance, as I said last week, you could have one video after another video out of context dealing with the police and police brutality. And next thing you know, the loudest people in the community, the communists, are wanting community policing, which means what? Now we've got a communist group of thugs that want to oversee the police. And due to political pressure in the media, now the city council and the police chief succumb, and now your local police are being reviewed by a citizen board. Now they don't just answer to the city council and chief of police, they now answer to a community board. Because a fake story has been created, something out of context, false information, or even they deliberately hired substandard officers who they knew would go out with their gun and badge and have a power trip and do something stupid and get it on video so they could use that to say, oh, you see, we need community policing. We need a citizen board to oversee the police. It's not good enough just to have the city council, the politicians, and the chief of police. They all have something to hide. They're worried about lawsuits and bad press. We need to have a community organization now also overseeing the police. And now who's overseeing your police? A communist community organization. Now, how do they get the public to go along with this? Fake news, fake stories are deliberately created chaos or social turbulence, a series of crises, which gets people so angry that now they submit to the so-called solution. But the whole thing was a psychological operation, fake news, fake information, or deliberately created crisis to get people to have anger. And then they have anger, they will agree to things and make available things that they would never, ever accept before. That's how it's done. Look at this. The psychiatrist, Dr. William Sargent of the Tavistock Institute, explained this process again when he continued. Its various group manifestations, pulling off this, making people upset or afraid or fear, the various group manifestations are sometimes classified under the heading of herd instincts and appear most spectacularly in wartime during severe epidemics and in all similar periods of common danger, which increase anxiety and so individual and mass suggestibility. What are the words here? Herd instincts, a common danger, mass suggestibility. So we want the whole community to respond together. So we'll use the media, paper, radio, television to create, oh, there's a common danger. And now here's the mass suggestibility comes along of what is the solution. And now your community has just surrendered to the, quote, solution, end quote, that is desired by the cultural Marxist. But you had to create this psychological process that made people have an inability to think with reason, logic, and context, and to simply go off fear, anxiety, group herd mentality. Well, if that's what everybody else wants, who am I to disagree? Harry Overstreet, chair of the Department of Philosophy and Psychology at City College of New York, wrote in 1952 in the, quote, Great Enterprise. This is what was his book. Here's what he said, quote, through clinical experience, we have come to recognize one invariable characteristic of that sick condition of the mind we call neurosis, namely rigidity. The rigidity is found in several areas. In each of these, we can predict that the individual will respond with trigger quickness and in exactly the same way. Sometimes it appears such persons have constellation of prejudice areas. A man, for example, may be angrily against racial equality or race equality. Public housing, the TVA, financial and technical aid to backward countries, organized labor, and the preaching of social rather than salvational religion. Try as we may, we can scarcely open up a subject that does not tap their primitive automatic againstness. Such people may appear normal in the sense that they are able to hold a job and otherwise maintain their status as members of society, but they are, we now recognize, well along the road toward mental illness. So let me get this straight. If you're opposed to socialism, the labor unions being hijacked by the socialists, if you're opposed to what they call race equality, which by that they mean affirmative action, meaning it doesn't go to the person most qualified, it goes to the person with the right skin color. So that's really reverse racism. But if you're against that, if you're against public housing, more social programs, government expansion, all of this proves that you're well, what? What's the slide say? Well along the road toward mental illness. In other words, folks, being a conservative, a constitutionalist, a Christian, a capitalist makes you what? Mentally ill. Well, isn't that exactly what we heard from the 15th Annual White Privilege Conference in Madison, Wisconsin a few years ago with a hidden camera? If you're a capitalist, you're a racist. If you're a Christian, you're a racist. So you're not only a racist now, if you're a capitalist and a Christian, you're now mentally ill. At least you're well on your way. You're well on the road toward mental illness. Here's a 1948 International Congress on Mental Health, and they published a statement. It's called Mental Health and World Citizenship. Oh, boy. Now, if you're against globalism, you're mentally ill. If you're now against the United Nations and globalism, guess what? You're mentally ill. Now, this was 1948. How advanced do you think this thinking is today? Here's what they said in Mental Health and World Citizenship. Quote, principles of mental health cannot be successfully furthered in any society unless there is progress. Acceptance of the concept of world citizenship. World citizenship can be widely extended among all peoples through applications of the principles of mental health. This indeed is the chief problem. How to mobilize human will so that the individual and group resistance to change can be overcome. At a major turning point in world history, there is an obligation of social scientists and psychiatrists to attempt this new formulation, end quote. So notice what they're saying. How do we mobilize the human will? How do we take advantage of the group to get them to embrace the group consensus, to do away with group resistance? Well, we're going to go to psychiatrists. Psychiatrists, yeah. So if you're against world government, we've already seen that you're mental. You have a automatic againstness. Well, let's talk about what is known as mental hygiene. Well, that's a very interesting word, isn't it? Mental hygiene. That's what the movement was called for a long time, and then they decided they better come up with a better name. Mental hygiene is really closely tied to eugenics. Remember eugenics? Adolf Hitler was for eugenics, a perfect Aryan race, breeding, so you have the perfect human, or what Nietzsche called the Superman. And that's what, of course, Hitler was doing, was he was following the worldview of Charles Darwin with Darwinian evolution. And then he combined that with Friedrich Nietzsche's idea of the Superman race, the perfect human being in mind and thought. Now we're talking about spiritual evolution, societal evolution, biological evolution. So you have the perfect individual. That's what Hitler was for, right? This is what Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was for. Eugenics. She worked with a Nazi doctor. She thought we had to do away with the people of color, the Hispanics, blacks, Slavics, anyone like that. They were called weeds in her vocabulary. Weeds. Remember, she spoke to the women's auxiliary of the KKK and was quite excited about it. I've shared that with you in past programs. Well, that's eugenics. Well, did you know that there's a mental eugenics? Did you know that? It's called mental hygiene. There is a mental hygienics or eugenics. There's a worldview eugenics where we are going to make sure that people who don't think the right way aren't advanced. Now, traditional eugenics doesn't want people who don't think the right way, who don't come from the right background, the right breeding, the right people group. We don't want them breeding, right? That's what it teaches. This mental eugenics or mental hygiene is about making sure that the wrong people are not gaining influence over others. Isn't that what Aldous Huxley wrote in his book, Brave New World? Round pegs don't fit in square holes, and tend to have dangerous thoughts about the social system and infect others with their discontent. In other words, you got to be careful who you let become pastors and teachers and broadcasters and journalists and the like, right? Mental hygiene. Well, look at this. Here we go. Mental hygiene. The leaders of the Tavistock Institute called their agenda mental hygiene. And it's closely connected to eugenics with the goal of eliminating from societal influence those who are deemed mentally ill, as evident in their conservative Judeo-Christian worldview. Now, this gentleman here is G. Brock Chisholm. He was the first director general of the World Health Organization in 1948. And in 1957, he became president of World Federation of Mental Health, G. Brock Chisholm. Now, if you go to the website of the World Federation of Mental Health, here's their history. You don't have to take my word for it. You could go to their website tonight. Here's what you would read. That George Brock Chisholm was the first director general of the World Health Organization, who suggested that the World Federation of Mental Health be created. George Brock Chisholm, a Canadian psychiatrist, envisioned the World Federation of Mental Health as an international non-governmental body to provide a link to grassroots mental health organizations and United Nations agencies. A radical thinker, Chisholm's view that health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity, provided early direction both for the World Health Organization and the World Federation of Mental Health. Chisholm's close friend, John Jack Rawlings Rees. Well, wait a minute. Where do we know that name from? The Tavistock Institute. So now we're connecting the Tavistock Institute with the World Federation of Mental Health and the World Health Organization. His close friend, John Jack Rawlings Rees, a British military psychiatrist and founder of the renowned Tavistock Institute, accepted the challenge. In 1947, the International Committee on Mental Hygiene agreed to change their name to the World Federation of Mental Health and accept a new purpose to promote among all peoples and nations the highest possible level of mental health in its broadest biological, medical, educational, and social aspects. The lead architects of this vision were Rees and Chisholm, together with eminent psychiatrist George Stevenson, Clarence Hinks, author Ruggles, and Harry Stack Sullivan, and noted anthropologist Margaret Mead. Hello, wait a minute, Margaret Mead. Now, there's a name that we should all be familiar with if you're alumni of this broadcast. Haven't we talked an awful lot about Margaret Mead? I was looking for my book, Grave Influence. I don't see it here on my little table next to me, but we talk about Margaret Mead in Grave Influence. You remember us talking about Margaret Mead? Margaret Mead. Yep, I'm going to tell you about Margaret Mead. But notice that Margaret Mead worked with these guys to create the World Federation of Mental Health. The resolution found the World Federation of Mental Health began with a meeting in the British Ministry of Health building during the London Congress on the night of the 18th of August and completed on the night of the 19th of August, 1948. Well, looky there. Grave Influence. Page 152. If you have my book, Grave Influence, all you got to do is go to page 152. Remember us talking about Margaret Mead? What is she? Radical lesbian Margaret Mead. Wait a minute. Margaret Mead wants to decide who's mentally stable, who's mentally ill. Huh. I bet you the Christians and the conservatives and the constitutionalists in her mind would be mentally ill if she's hanging out with Chisholm and Rees, because we already know from their quotes, if you're against socialism, big government, redistribution of wealth, world, United Nations, etc., you're well on your way to mental illness. So clearly she would agree with them. Now, isn't this the kettle calling the pot black? Because here is Margaret Mead wanting to saddle up with these boys and declare that Christians and conservatives and constitutionalists and nationalists, those who believe in national borders, are well on their way to mental illness. But hey, she's completely normal as a lesbian. Let's not forget that not too many years ago, that used to fall into the category of a mentally disturbed individual. But then that became politically incorrect, so that was changed. But wow. Well, radical lesbian Margaret Mead, as I wrote on page 152 of Grave Influence, viewed mandatory national service as a way to wage her war on the family, and more specifically on marriage, as described by Doug Bandow in his article, National Service, the Enduring Panacea. Quote, in 1967, for instance, anthropologist Margaret Mead argued that universal service would make it possible to assay the defects and the potentialities of every young American on the threshold of adulthood. The experience would have some unique impacts on women, she observed. since it would replace for girls, and even more for boys, marriage as the route away from the parental home, end quote. Wait a minute. Margaret Mead, the lesbian, didn't want people getting married? She wanted girls to be taken out of their dad's home and not be raised there as young ladies and then get engaged and go off into the home of their husband? You mean she's opposed? Really, a shocker. The lesbian Margaret Mead was opposed to marriage. Shocker. Margaret Mead, the lesbian, was a radical Marxist lesbian, should I add, was opposed to the traditional family, which is the incubator for capitalism. And we're the ones that are crazy? Well, that's Margaret Mead. In the ideal society she outlined, people would be homosexual when young, then switch to heterosexuality during the breeding years, then switch back. Among the direct descendants of this notion of universal service are the Peace Corps and AmeriCorps, end quote. And by the way, in March of 2020, they're supposed to be coming, as we've been warning now for 2 years, they're supposed to be released a report on America's daughters, drafting America's daughters. Yeah, Margaret Mead and this group of folks wanted, like William James, as I describe in my book, Grave Influence. And by the way, if you don't have the book, Grave Influence, you don't need to go buy it. All you need to do is be a member of the Situation Room, look under the library tab, and there's a PDF of my book, Grave Influence, Religious Trojan Horse, The Coming Religious Reich, Marxianity, and a whole bunch of them. You don't need to go buy them. They're already yours to download under the library tab if you're a member of the Situation Room, along with about $200,000 in retail price of ebooks, audiobooks, transcripts, conference DVDs, documentaries, and the like. So if you're a member of the Situation Room, you can go under the library tab, download Grave Influence, and you'll find all this. And again, that was on page 157 of my book, Grave Influence, situationroom.net. Now, as we've been warning you for about 2 years, there is a report that's supposed to be due March of 2020 of a commission that was put together right as Barack Obama literally was going out the White House doors with John McCain, the late John McCain, and Barack Obama put together a commission on drafting America's daughters. So the Marxist, the feminist, they want to destroy marriage, the family, and they want to, I think, enlist your daughters not only into national service, mandatory inscription, which this commission is also studying. This commission is also studying what I've been warning about for many, many years in my books, mandatory volunteerism. Now, there's an oxymoron for you. Mandatory volunteerism. This commission is not only studying what Margaret Mead and these William James and others wanted, mandatory volunteerism. Every kid in a young age, elementary, certainly junior high and high school, will have to have so many hours of community service. And don't think that's going to, by the way, take place at your local church or pro-life clinic. In fact, as the legislation was written under Barack Obama that I warned about all the way back in, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, that original legislation known as the GIVE Act, that was an acronym, G-I-V-E, the GIVE Act, you couldn't be on a church worship team or work on a church building in any capacity, like being on the custodial crew or being on the worship team. No. If you're going through this program, which would then allow you to get federal funding for more for college, you could have no contact with your local church. Now, isn't that interesting? Because in brainwashing, one of the things they do is to make sure they isolate you from any competing worldviews that could undermine the brainwashing process. So Barack Obama and his team already were wanting a mandatory volunteerism to grab the young kids at an early age, junior high, high school, and then put them into so many hours of community service to turn them into radical community organizers, social justice warriors. Well, on his way out the door as president, literally Barack Obama and the late John McCain, he was alive then, but he's now dead, they put together this commission to not only study whether they should be making women sign up for the selective service, just like boys have to at 18, but should they mandate community service on all young people? Now, we're waiting on that report to come out, and it's supposed to come out by March of 2020. Interesting, one of the people who sat on that commission is a man who was in the military who now is a quote female, wears a wig, I guess that's a wig, wears a wig, dresses as a female, transgender, was a man in the military, now a woman. That person is sitting on this commission. We pretty much know what it is they're going to recommend, right? But all of this, folks, is again a part of this worldview of these people that were part of the Federation of Mental Health. the World Federation of Mental Health, including people like Margaret Mead, who wanted mandatory volunteerism. Women really not to have the option of getting married and having children because they might actually do that. So in a speech in Washington, D.C. in 1945, Dr. G. Brock Chisholm declared, remember again, Dr. G. Brock Chisholm is the one that helped start the World Federation of Mental Health. Quote, "What basic psychological distortion can be found in every civilization of which we know anything? The only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is morality." Whoa, wait a minute. The only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is morality? The concept of right and wrong. The reinterpretation and eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belated objectives of nearly all psychotherapy. Wait a minute. What is the ultimate goal of psychotherapy? To get people to believe that there is no such thing as right and wrong. You getting the idea, folks? If the race is to be freed from its crippling burden of good and evil, it must be psychiatrists who take original responsibility. In a speech on education on September 11th, 1954, in California, Dr. G. Brock Chisholm declared, quote, "The people who have been taught to believe whatever they were told by their parents or their teachers are the people who are the menace to the world," end quote. If you believe what mommy and daddy taught you, that's not critical. That's interesting because that's actually a quote by one of the leading educrats in America that I quote in one of my books from many, many years ago, who declared, what is critical thinking? We all want our kids to be critical thinkers, right? And so they put out these objectives for outcome-based education. One of them was that kids are to be critical thinkers. And sadly, a lot of Americans said, oh, that's a great standard. I'm all for kids being critical thinkers. Yeah, but what does that mean? And we know from one educrat that I quote in several of my books for years, she declared, quote, "Critical thinking means you don't listen to what mommy and daddy have said." That's a critical thinker. Well, that's what Dr. G. Brock Chisholm is saying. Quote, "The people who have been taught to believe whatever they were told by their parents or teachers are the people who are the menace to the world." If you believe in right and wrong, you're part of the problem. He went on to declare in 1946, quote, "Even self-defense may involve a neurotic reaction when it means defending one's own excessive wealth from others who are in need." Wait a minute. Now, if you're opposed to progressive income tax, having your property and wealth stolen from you, taking from you what is not rightfully theirs to take, they take from you to give to someone else what is not rightfully theirs to receive. And if you disagree with it, guess what? It's because you're mentally ill. So if you're a capitalist, you believe thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not steal, and you don't like having the government steal your money, you're mentally ill. You're not only greedy and a racist, you're mentally ill. He went on to declare in 1946, "There must be an opportunity to live responsibly comfortable for all the people in the world on economic levels, which do not vary too widely, either geographically or by groups within a population. This is a simple matter of redistribution of material wealth." So we find out that Mr. G. Brock Chisholm is what? He's a socialist. If you believe in morality, you're the problem. If you listen to your mom and dad, you're a menace to the world. If you believe in right and wrong, you're mentally unstable. If you're not for socialism, you're mentally unstable. If you're not for world government, you're mentally unstable. Hey, wait a minute, folks. It's not just going to be you're a hater and you're a racist. The next stage is mental illness. Here's John Rawlings Rees. Picture of him. In a speech of October 1940 to the National Council for Mental Hygiene, John Rawlings Rees of the Tavistock Institute admonished his colleagues not to refer to their agenda as mental hygiene. Quote, "Don't let us mention mental hygiene, though we can safely write in terms of mental health and common sense," end quote. In the same speech, John Rawlings Rees admitted their goal is propaganda, deception, and to infiltrate every power center in America and Great Britain when he declared, quote, "We have often been too spasmodic in our work, and I feel we need a long-term plan of propaganda. Here again, we had probably better be secretive and not mention this council or any other body, but simply write or speak as individuals. Public life, politics, and industry should all of them be within our sphere of influence. Parliament, the press, and other publications are the most obvious ways by which our propaganda can be got across, end quote. Well, isn't that refreshing? At least Mr. Rawlings-Reese of the Tavistock Institute is willing to call it what it is, propaganda. But notice, too, he said, we had better be secretive about this. Wait a minute. You mean a conspiracy? Well, you can't believe in a conspiracy. That's crazy talk. You mean he wants to use the power of politics and industry and the press to push their, quote, propaganda, as he called it? Are you talking about a group of power elite? Are you talking about a group of powerful people who hate Christians and conservatives or for globalism and internationalism? That want to use their power of the media to change people's worldview through information warfare? And they're really rich and powerful? You mean people like George Soros and others? And now if you believe that, you're crazy. You're into conspiracy talk. You're a tin hat wearing fool. But yet, did you know that Ronald Reagan warned about this group? Did you know that President Woodrow Wilson, for all his liberalism, had enough common sense to know about this group? Did you know that Richard Nixon wrote about this in 1980? Oh, yeah, I'll get there. Here's Rawlings-Reese. He said, quote, here again, we'd probably better be secretive and not mention this council or any other body. Your attention must not be confined merely to the daily press, for there are innumerable weekly and monthly journals and special professional and trade papers. This council had recently been cooperating in some experiments with films. Those of you who know books and their authors and films and their makers might be doing some long-term planning of the right kind of propaganda, end quote. Notice he's saying we're not only going to use the press, we're meaning the journals and papers, weekly, daily, we're going to use films and movies. Well, that's very interesting. Now we see the Tavistock and their idea merging with the Frankfurt School, who had some of the same people, by the way. They appreciated each other, even had some of the same people. What was the Frankfurt School's goal? Media and education. Media and education. To do what? Have a revolution. To go against what? Christians and capitalists. The source of all suffering and oppression is Christians and capitalists. Well, the Tavistock Institute saying the same thing. They just said, we're going to do it with psychology, and we'll name all these people as being mentally ill. And we'll make this quackery mainstream. And it'll be a profession that people look up to. But all it is a gigantic propaganda for the cultural elitist, the power elite, the cultural Marxist, the globalist, to label their opposition as crazy. Look at, this is amazing right here. This is a picture of the Congressional Record, February 9th, 1917, page 2947. Now, this is an actual picture I went and found of the Congressional Record from February 9th, 1917, when Representative Oscar Galloway of Texas gave testimony. Here is what he wrote. In March 1915, the J.P. Morgan interest, the steel, shipbuilding, and powered interest, and their subsidiary organizations got together 12 men high up in the newspaper world and employed them to select the most influential newspapers in the United States and sufficient numbers of them to control generally the policy of the daily press. They found it was only necessary to purchase the control of 25 of the greatest papers. An agreement was reached. The policy of the papers was bought to be paid for by the month. An editor was furnished for each paper to properly supervise and edit information regarding the questions of preparedness, militarism, financial policy, and other things of national and international nature considered vital to the interest of the purchasers. End quote. Wasn't that interesting? Right there on the floor of the House of Representatives in 1917 by Representative Oscar Galloway of Texas, he said, hey, there was a group of very wealthy men connected back to J.P. Morgan and the shipping and all kinds of other power interests, and they got together and they decided what papers do they need to buy up, the daily papers, to push their public policy and international agenda on the American people. And they found they only needed to purchase the rights to have published what they wanted with the editors and the stories they wanted, 25 papers. That's it, 25 papers. And at that time, they could control the worldview of much of America. Yeah, don't worry about these stories of secret groups or shadow government or invisible government. That's all crazy talk. No, we've got all, folks, this is just This is just a small little bit of the history. After this series, eventually I'm going to do a series this year on the Power Elite. I'll do a whole series just on the Power Elite and show you, going back many, many years ago, how this group has moved and shaped American policy. Here's Edward Bernays. Now, he's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. Edward Bernays, he's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And he authored a book in 1928 called Propaganda. Okay? Propaganda. And here's what he wrote. Quote, "Those who manipulate the organized habits and opinions of the masses constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of the country. It remains a fact that in almost every aspect or every act of our lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons. It is they who pull the wires, which control the public mind and guide the world. As civilization has become more complex and as the need for invisible government has been increasingly demonstrated, the technical means have been invented and developed by which opinion may be regimented." Well, isn't that interesting? Twice, the nephew of Sigmund Freud in his 1928 book, Propaganda, referred to the invisible government and how this small group of people is able to control the thinking of the masses. Now, again, you think this is all crazy talk? Well, listen to what Ronald Reagan had to say. November 6th, 1979, the San Jose Mercury newspaper reports, Ronald Reagan said this, quote, "I think there's an elite in this country, and they are the very ones who run an elitist government. They want a government by a handful of people because they don't believe the people themselves can run their lives. Are we going to have an elitist government that makes decisions for the people's lives? Or are we going to believe, as we have for so many decades, that the people can make these decisions for themselves?" End quote. Ronald Reagan, 1979. How about this? President Woodrow Wilson, in his book, The New Freedom, published in 1913, the first year of his presidency. Here's what Woodrow Wilson said. President Wilson said, quote, "Since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacturing are afraid of somebody or are afraid of something. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so perverse that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. We have all been dreading all along the time when the combined power of high finance would be greater than the power of the government. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government of free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men." End quote. Again, 1913, President Wilson. Now, look at what Richard Nixon wrote in his book, The Real War. The Real War, published in 1980. Quote, "The nation's immediate problem is that while the common man fights America's wars, the intellectual elite set its agenda. Today, whether the West lives or dies is in the hands of the new power elite. Those who set the terms of public debate, who manipulate the symbols, who decide whether nations or leaders will be depicted on 100 million television sets as good or bad, this power elite sets the limits of the possible for president and Congress. It molds the impressions that move the nation or mire it." End quote. Richard Nixon, again, used the term power elite twice. Whether you are allowed to appear on the television sets at the time of 100 million Americans and be perceived as good or bad is up to the power elite. The agenda of the president and Congress is up to that of the power elite. Now, who is he talking about? Today, we might refer to that group as the deep state. And would you be shocked to find out as we will see in future studies together, that the deep state through the CIA has been involved in using the media to carry out psychological warfare, information operations on America, including operations that were exposed in, well, many years ago, going back to the 1950s and forward, particularly one program known as Operation Mockingbird. Operation Mockingbird, in which it came out that indeed the CIA was using people in the media to push the narrative of the CIA. And now perhaps in the past, the motive was for good. Maybe the motive was to convince Americans of the dangers of communism. And maybe for the purpose of national security and maintaining our freedoms and liberties and our constitutional republic, maybe the intelligence community wanted to try to offset the liberalism of the media, knowing that the Tavistock Institute, knowing that the Frankfurt School, particularly the Frankfurt School, were so filled with Marxists and were targeting media and education. Maybe there were some patriotic folks in our intelligence community that actually decided they wanted to use the media to get an alternative out there, which was the truth, related to the evils of communism versus having communism dressed up and fed to the American people on our masking terms. So let's not be too quick to say that what they were doing was always bad. Remember, there's good information operation and there's bad information operation. So maybe there were in the 1950s some very patriotic American men who worked in our intelligence community who realized that indeed folks from the Frankfurt School, the Tavistock Institute, other groups had penetrated media and were trying to portray to the American people things that were not true. And they saw this as an opportunity to fight fire with fire, and they sought to put people into media and to get out their story. Well, either way, it is a matter of historical fact that the Central Intelligence Agency was involved in something called Information Mockingbird and was using people in the media to get out their story. Now, here's the point I'm making. Maybe it was meant for good patriotic purposes to try to offset the propaganda of the communists and the globalists. But don't tell me that there isn't a track record of doing this. And it seems as though what has been done now for many years is not to use people in the intelligence community who are patriotic, who then influence the media for the good of maintaining our constitutional republic, but bad people in our intelligence community that we call the deep state that are penetrating the media and are now using the media and education and the intelligence community to destroy our constitutional republic. The point is this: there is good information operation and there is bad information operation, and there's some seriously bad information operation that's been going on. And Richard Nixon knew this, and he said, this is a powerful group, the power elite. Whether we call it the deep state, shadow government, invisible government, whatever you want to call it, Richard Nixon knew about it, Woodrow Wilson knew about it, Ronald Reagan knew about it, and we know, as we saw from the folks at the Tavistock Institute, they, in the 1940s, set out to use the media and films to portray their idea of mental health and hygiene, which was to portray as anyone who believed in right and wrong, believed what their traditional, moral, constitutional, Christian parents, free market parents told them was the menace to society. And you wonder why we have mind control and much of it coming from a power elite. We'll pick it up right here next week. No, next week we're off for Super Bowl. We'll pick it up after that. Lesson 7, Information Operation and American Christians. Information Warfare and American Christians. My friends, where else are you going to hear this? It takes hours and hours to put this together and study and build the PowerPoint and bring it to you. And if you appreciate it, there's two ways you can support us. I hope more of you will do that. Either a tax-deductible contribution at WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com, and or join our Situation Room at SituationRoom.net. That's SituationRoom.net. Thanks so much for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care.